Well, I suppose we should go ahead and get started. John Hewlett, University of Wyoming Farm Management Specialist, and working a lot in the area of risk management these days. And I'm going to talk to you about a number of different tools that are available to help manage risk, whether that be in a small enterprise or a more traditional kind of commercial agriculture enterprise. I think a number of these things apply no matter what the setting. So without further ado, make this thing work. So what are some of the challenges that you all see that we face in terms of agriculture? Challenges to our success in the long term or short term, either one. I've got markets listed as one possibility.
The weather.
The weather, really, that's a challenge, yeah. And pretty much no matter where you go, right? Sometimes it's too wet, too dry, doesn't really matter where you are, it's always too much something. Yeah, Mother Nature offers a number of challenges, no question. Anything else? Money? Well, I thought your problem was space. That's what you told me this morning. Money is often a problem trying to get started in agriculture because it usually requires a lot of capital, many of the different kinds of things we'd think about doing. Anything else?
Disease,
especially if we have animals, but even crops have real disease problems. You see all the genetic engineering we're doing today to try to overcome some of those challenges, and we make progress, but then there are always other things that seems like come up to new bugs or whatever that get us back in trouble again. So certainly lots of challenges that we face in agriculture. Grasshoppers this year, right? But another one that often gets mentioned, and we face this particularly in this part of the West, is transportation. We can produce things, but we're a long ways from where people consume them. And so becomes a challenge to us financially or even physically to get the products that we produce to the markets where the people are willing to buy them. Another one that's much more prevalent these days than has been maybe in the past is labor. We're a very mechanized agriculture today as compared to, 10, 20 years ago. But even having said that, we can't seem to find even just the minimal labor to run that machinery oftentimes and labor with the skills that we need to do it properly so that we're not either damaging the crop or ruining the machines, et cetera. It's a real challenge and represents maybe a hurdle that prevents us from being able to accomplish the enterprises we're looking at. Certainly there are others, but the point being is that these challenges that we face introduce this dimension of risk into the operations that we try to run, the enterprises that we try to operate and make our profit from. And it's that risk or the uncertainty about the return or the uncertainty of the ability to sell that product at a price that's reasonable for us, having invested the time and capital to produce that crop or the commodity, at a level that will sustain us and our families into the future. And so that is really the number one challenge if you're to look at what we try to manage in a lot of ways in financial and farm management is this element of risk. So I'm going to talk a bit more about that as we go along. It's defined more or less in a bulletin that was put together in a number of years back now by some folks in USDA that laid out this concept of the five sources of risk as being a list of sources of risk that pretty well encompass all the different dimensions of risk that we might think about managing. And so market risk, we've already kind of talked about. It's the price we receive, and a lot of times when we produce a commodity, we have to accept the price that the market offers. We don't get to price the products at the level that would make an appropriate return. We have to take the price that the market offers. But unfortunately, that price isn't even known very long, in some cases by minutes or even seconds on the board, right? So market prices, even though we can look them up more easily because of technology, they don't stay the same and as a result represent a real big source of risk to us, as well as the quality of the product that we produce is another marketing dimension to the price that we actually receive. It depends in terms of the markets that we're able to access as to the quality of the product, and of course that transportation dimension as well. Production risk is the other one we've already mentioned, right? That weather component. What does Mother Nature do to us? The yield and the quality of that crop that we take off or the livestock as we harvest them are not always known, and they're subject to a lot of variables, and that represents that production risk. Disease and other kinds of things will affect that and certainly have to be taken into account and managed as best we can as we go along. But in a lot of ways, we have to accept that that comes out the other end of the production process. It's just kind of the nature of the game. We don't have a lot of control over some aspects of it. Financial risk is certainly a risk that we pay a lot more attention to in agriculture, where we have to borrow outside capital, where we have our own capital, we're able to operate out of our own bank accounts. We're not as at risk in terms of the financial dimension of the operation. But a lot of, I don't know too many operations anymore that can get by on their own capital. You tend to have to borrow at least operating capital to get through the year, and as a result, you're at risk as to whether you can repay that out of this year's production, given prices and production levels and so on, as well as over the long haul in a solvency sense we talked about in our last session. There's a risk that we may not be able to stay in business because we can't meet our bills and obligations in the longer term sense. And then there are two that we don't talk a lot about in agriculture but are becoming more and more important all the time. The human resource risk, we've already talked about labor, but what about you as a manager? You know, with technology and increased options in terms of genetically modified seeds and the new technology in terms of chemicals we can use to control weeds, pests, and so on, there's a real challenge to us to just even stay on top of a regular sort of ongoing commercial enterprise that we would have traditionally managed without thinking about too many alternatives. And then especially if we're looking at some alternative enterprises or new enterprises, that whole dimension of needing to learn how to manage that crop or how to grow it even, as compared to things that we already have some familiarity with, represents another sort of risk. A third dimension to the human resource risk area is that passing the operation successfully from the current generation to the next. And whether or not we can do that in a lot of ways determines whether or not we've been successful almost in a lifetime kind of sense. And we don't do that very well in this country. Other countries tend to have a little more formalized and they do discuss it more openly. But here in the United States, we tend not to want to talk about it until there's a crisis. And that usually means that one of the parents of the previous generation have passed and it creates a crisis in terms of labor or in terms of management skills and abilities, in which case we end up trying to cope with that difficult situation, but certainly is a big risk in agriculture. And then finally, legal and institutional risks in terms of increasing regulation and needs to comply with various dimensions of federal or state regulation and control over the production of various commodities that we might produce, but is especially true when you focus on and are trying to produce a more of a niche product, but also increasing number of agencies that are promulgating regulations and having something to say about how we operate our enterprises. So you might look at the desire to manage an animal enterprise in a more humane way, not necessarily legislated, but an institutional risk in the sense that we need to take care of our animals well, and that if anyone has any questions, we might want to have some documentation to show that we are doing due diligence in the way we operate our enterprises. Again, a change in the world that in which we live, where traditional agriculture, we might not have worried about these things. Today, we have to be concerned about a number of different sources of risk. Do those all make sense to you guys? Questions about that at all? Covered it. Okay. Great. Well, the other thing that's really confounding here is that these areas of risk are not, as I've talked about them, are not isolated. You can't just manage marketing risk, for example, without having some financial consequences, probably, in the financial risk area. That these risks are interrelated and must be managed kind of as a group if you're going to be successful over the long haul. And so not only do we have several areas of risk to focus on, but we also need to think about how what we do to manage them integrates with management of other dimensions. Wait for the train to go by, right? So another question I guess I'd ask, given I'm supposed to talk about the success of and the tools that are available to help ensure that we are successful, is how do we define success? Well, the sort of traditional way of thinking about it is the business returns, right? What we get in the way of return over and above the cost that we have in our operation. But I'm here today to tell you that that may not be the only way to think about it. Another dimension to it is certainly what that return might be to our family, especially if we're a family operation, and a lot of folks in this part of the world are involved in agriculture or involved in a family type operation. That's obviously important. But it might also be important to us to think about what we get out of it ourselves as individuals, and how do we consider that in the broader scheme of things as to returns that are not financial. As a program I've been involved in a few years back now is called Enterprising Rural Families, and we developed this model to kind of help think about that. That really, when we're involved in an enterprise, like an agricultural enterprise as a rural family, there are several different dimensions to it. And those dimensions actually overlap. So the individual, family, and business all overlap to create this zone of that enterprise. And to be effective, we have to manage those systems, if you want to think about it that way, effectively, right? We have to think about what we do in the way of business and how that might influence or affect our family, and how being involved in a family, whether we have children or in-laws that have married into the family, and how that affects them, what are their futures like? And so the individuals that are involved in that family in a broader sense, not just an immediate family, but several generations perhaps, and several siblings that are involved in an operation, how does that all fit together? And if we're effective, we need to think about how managing one system versus another could be maybe leading us to focus or be more heavily weighted onto one side or another, which may not give us the outcome that we want. And then we've also got this broader a community dimension as well, that we are not operating in isolation, and was discussed in our luncheon by our luncheon speaker, in the sense that we're all in this together, and if everybody else goes away and you're still there, is that really what it's all about? Probably not. And so while we could focus in the business area and only try to generate additional return for our financial commitment there, if we do that and not think about the impact on our family or on ourselves as individuals, well, we're probably, lopsided in the sense of not being well balanced. And if we're going to be successful in the long haul, it's probably the balance situation that we're trying to move toward. So again, just challenging you to think about that. There are a couple of other things I guess I'd point out to get us thinking about this. And that is that, basically agriculture across the U.S. is family owned. In fact, if we look at the ag statistics put out by the National Ag Statistics Service, 86%, in fact, in the 2007 census of agriculture are owned by families or run by families. And about 25% of those operators that are involved in those enterprises are age 65 and older. So you see that we're getting to the point where folks are getting ready to retire or are going to leave the family business, and we're probably going to lose a lot of capacity and especially if they pass on before they've effectively transferred management functions over to the next generation, which is often the case, creates some real hurdles for us to overcome. And finally, the one that I guess is probably most concerning to me is that by a study done by Arnoff, I've cited here in 2001, it's basically estimated that 30% of family-owned businesses are successfully transferred to the next generation. That's pretty good, but only about 10 to 15% of those operations then successfully pass to the third generation. And only 3 to 5% of those in total pass successfully to the fourth generation. That's just family businesses in general. It's not just agriculture, mind you, but in some ways, family businesses are at risk for this dimension? Anybody got a guess as to why that would be the case? Go ahead.
I mean, there's a sense of entitlement. You know, the first generation makes the money, the second generation, enjoys spending the money, and the third generation blows it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very common, in a lot of stuff that I've read, that's a real common dynamic.
Yeah, certainly those that didn't earn it don't value that capital and all the hard work that it took to get there nearly as much, I would agree. Other ideas?
Mm-hmm.
Changing interest, you might say, yeah, because the more people you get involved, the more likely it is there to find some other things that perhaps spark their interest, yeah. And in this day and age, people are more knowledgeable about options, right, as opposed to ag being kind of the traditional thing that you get involved in. Well, I'm going to argue with you that it's probably communication that gets us mostly in trouble. We don't, and I've already said this right once, but we don't talk about this stuff very effectively. We don't very effectively transfer the reins of management over to the next generation. And it's something that if we want to be continuing the operation into several generations down the track, that we need to think about how do we do that, and are there ways that we can do it more effectively? And there are. I mean, certainly there are, but whether or not we take advantage of those ways is up to us as individual operators. But again, if that's what success looks like, well, we need to manage for that objective, right? And I don't think many people are thinking about that much in these days. So in general, in terms of farm management kind of a sense, there are sort of four different alternatives that are suggested for managing risk. Certainly, we could assume the risk. Basically, we take it on and manage it as part of the operation, as part of the enterprises that we're involved in, and we don't try to do anything except just keep it on as long as we can. That may not be the most effective way. An alternative is that if we see certain activities that are more risky for us, there may be an opportunity to get out of that. So if we were, say, holding cattle through a lot, and we saw that as being a risky activity, and instead of owning them in the lot, we sell them off, so it minimizes our risk exposure, so to speak, so we're done with them as calves. And that's one way of just saying, well, that risk after they start putting on weight in a feedlot is too great, we're just going to avoid doing that. In some cases, we would have choices to do that. In other cases, maybe raising, in some cases, it may be more risky for us to try to avoid things and it's an integral part of our operation, so we don't get the chance to make a choice about it. And in which case, we have to learn it or look at what ways can we manage those risks. So it is possible in a number of cases to reduce the risk. So, for example, in cattle, if we were going to run them through a lot and retain ownership, we might contract those cattle, right? And that's a way of minimizing our price risk, at least. Production risk may not be something that we could control as well, but the price risk we don't have to accept 100% ourselves. We can share that with someone else by locking in the price. So we contract or in some other way pre-sell them before they're actually ready to be slaughtered. So that might be an example of reducing the risk or taking a strategy where we could transfer that risk in some ways to other people is another strategy here. And that may be best thought of maybe as insurance. And there are a number of insurance products that are available to transfer the risk. Of course, there's a fee associated with that, right? So you pay a fee, and someone else says, okay, if there's a great loss that is incurred, that we'll cover a portion of that loss. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what some of those alternatives are available to Wyoming agriculture managers. And I know I'm talking to two RMA employees here, so maybe I should really let them talk about this. But RMA is the Risk Management Agency, which is a branch of the USDA that is focused on helping farmers and ranchers manage risk through insurance products, federally subsidized insurance products. and essentially those products come from the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation is who it is that actually sets the rules and the rates and so on as to how those products get sold. So traditionally we've thought of the insurance products that I'm talking about as being a yield-based insurance. And so you think about corn or wheat or one of the traditional commodities that's grown that we can buy a yield insurance policy on if the weather is bad or some other event occurs that diminishes our yield and we had the insurance, we might be eligible for a payment. Okay, it's a way of transferring that risk and sharing it with someone else. In this case, the federal government that's willing to take on some of that risk for a fee. But of late, there are a number of other insurance options that have been offered. Price insurance is another type of insurance, primarily offered for livestock-type policies these days. But in that case, when prices go below what we had anticipated, we might be indemnified if at the time we sell, we get a lower price than what we kind of locked in with the insurance policy. So we can help mitigate or reduce some of the price risk that we face. And then finally, in more recent times, there are a number of policies now coming to insure revenue. And the benefit of revenue insurance is that revenue is affected by both price and quantity. And so if you're able to purchase one of these policies on the commodity you're producing, if prices go down or if the production is down for whatever reason in terms of the Mother Nature and the type of conditions we've experienced during the growing season, we might be eligible for an indemnity payment. A number of different products that are available to cover that at this time. But there seems to be a growing number, too, and it's difficult to actually keep up with all of these. It's possible to go on the RMA website and look up the number of acres and the relative level of insurance for the various crop policies and livestock policies that are being offered. But this is a list of kind of a brief list of the insurance policies available for crop production, ranging from the traditional MPCI, but now is being evolved to combo insurance. Is that right? Yep. So traditional yield insurance down through some of these revenue insurance products, one for alfalfa seed up in the basin, we get a little of that production. Might be of interest, but nursery is another whole area of insurance that is fairly new on the scene that we can actually protect some of the risks in terms of nursery production and that whole industry in the state. Not particularly developed here as compared to other states, but certainly a number of folks doing that. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that there are also is some insurance, an insurance-like product available from the Farm Service Agency called the Non-Insured Crop Disaster Assistance Program, or abbreviated as NAP, and that's available for crops where federal crop insurance is not available. So there are a number of options to protect crop production that, again, are developing as we go along. It seems like changes almost every production year we go through, some new option available to folks. Traditionally, we haven't thought about insurance available to livestock operators. A number of products now available there as well. One for pasture, rangeland, and forage production, and a recent component added to that for apiary. Folks that are involved in bee production, whether that be for honey or leaf cutter pollinization activities, you can insure those things now. LRP, which is a price insurance product, is available for feeder and fed cattle historically, been that way for quite a long time, as well as swine, but recently have added lamb as another commodity available under that price insurance. LGM is another recent development on the scene as a way of insuring the margin on animals that are on feed. So it's a kind of a complex product, but it basically gives you a way of insuring and protecting against the increase in feed price as well as the reduction in cattle price. So it's kind of a simultaneous deal. If you've got cattle, swine, or dairy is also available for insurance under this program as well. And then finally, AGR Lite is available both for crop as well as livestock production as a whole farm revenue insurance program. So you could basically wrap your entire farm together under one kind of an umbrella policy. And this AGR Lite is also available to be used in conjunction with some of these other insurance products should somebody want to buy up protection, for example, for against market risk or something. Okay, so there's a number of different policies available for livestock operators that, again, just 10 or 15 years ago wasn't even a possibility. Question?
That first one you have listed up there, PRF, does that mean a guy who's basically grazing cattle can insure the pasture he's grazing for production, and if you don't get the rain and the rain doesn't come up, you get paid for it?
That's the principle.
That's the basis.
That's the principle, yep. And so, obviously, in this part of the world, the forage we produce is critical to the success of a livestock enterprise, whether that be standing rangeland forage that we go out and harvest with the animals, or if it's stored forage in the sense of hay. And so we can buy insurance against the loss of production. That particular product is done, it says vegetation index there. It's done by satellite imagery in this part of the West. There's another variation that's based on rainfall. It's used in some other states, but here we're using the version that's based on a satellite imagery that's taken every 2 weeks, I think it is. Is that right? Yep. And so they can see whether or not the greenness that they can measure from on the ground level is changing to your detriment. And that's, again, it's just the basics. We could go into great depth, and there's a lot of information available, I'm tell you. You can even insure public range, which is another very interesting component, given a lot of people access and need that to make their operation successful through the year, right?
Yeah.
So that's another possibility. Good question. And again, as this NAP insurance is available in the absence of a federal crop insurance program that would cover one of the other specifics that we've talked about. And now, I guess one of the most recent developments is the 2008 Farm Bill brought about a number of different disaster assistance programs. Whereas in the past, the disaster assistance programs were what we call ad hoc. They were passed by Congress on a need basis, right? Where there's a disaster somewhere in the country, a hurricane comes through or a drought occurs, if there's a large fire or an earthquake or a tsunami or whatever, and there's appeal made from that state that was affected or a set of states, Congress would legislate and approve disaster assistance. Well, this program that was implemented by the 2008 Farm Bill is designed to make those disaster assistance benefits available on a permanent basis. So it's basically like a trust or a fund that's been set aside to pay out for disasters, which generally occur somewhere in the country almost every single year, for a number of different types of programs. The first of which is called the Supplemental Revenue Assistance Program, and basically is used to cover losses in counties that have been declared a disaster. Okay, and so that would be something that the governor in that state would play a role in deciding whether or not the level of loss has been great enough. But then that program can kick in, both for crops as well as potentially for range or livestock losses. Livestock Forage Disaster Program, LFP, is listed here, is for losses of forage due to a natural event. Okay. Then there's another one that specifically covers livestock losses, Livestock Indemnity Program. And then finally, there's kind of a fourth program that would cover in the case of the other three not basically covering you. And so that one's called the Emergency Livestock Assistance Program. It also covers, there are also some other commodities that are covered in programs that are sort of minor commodities in this part of the world. So I didn't list them, but this component offers a real additional assistance should something bad happen in an agricultural production setting. The thing that's very important to recognize, though, is to participate in these programs that federal crop insurance is needed you must participate in those. Okay, so the insurance isn't optional. If you want to be able to claim some kind of a disaster payment, even though it's funded, you may not have access to those funds because you didn't buy the insurance product. Okay, I'm not really going to go into all the details, but that's something really important to recognize if this is important to you and wanting to be eligible. Any questions about that? Okay, another thing that we could do, activity we could do to actually ensure our success is to do a little business planning. And so planning in terms of our production, planning in terms of our markets and what timing, what prices we expect to gain through that. Certainly keeping good records is a very important activity if we're going to be successful going forward, as well as doing some type of financial analysis as to what was our performance last year, and comparing that to previous years, and in the planning sense also maybe making projections for coming years. And perhaps most importantly, having that plan and having done some projections is to actually monitor what's going on and exert some kind of control if that is available to us, to manage the thing, get involved in, and try to mitigate losses where possible is what management is all about. So again, I don't want to stress this too much, but you know, we tend to poo-poo this kind of activity, and yet it may be the most critical thing we could do and spend our time on as managers, as opposed to being out doing the things we enjoy, certainly, and whether that be driving the tractor, or riding the horse, managing cattle, and so on. This is really important activity as well. Just want to recognize that. And so education, I guess, is the final thing I was going to suggest as a tool for helping us to manage. You think of us in that human resource sense that I talked about as managers, and we have a limited capacity, right? Limited by our own knowledge and our own abilities because of our background and training that we've got up to this point. Doesn't mean we can't enhance that, but we have to recognize the deficiency first, right? If we don't know about managing a new enterprise and maybe we're thinking about, maybe more obvious. But if we, for example, don't keep up on the press as to the newest type of variety of seeds that are available for us to plant, GM or modified seeds or engineered seeds or the newest chemicals and so on, there could be a real risk to us. And so education is a way of enhancing that. And I want to talk about a number of sources that we put together specifically to address risk and risk management as some tools that you might think about for managing your own enterprises. The first of which is a series of publications that we're working on and have been publishing for several years now. This is an example of one insert that we put together this last winter. Anybody here seen that? Several people? Okay, that's good. And what we've tried to do there is spell out some different kinds of risk management options, spanning all the way from production risk and what are some of the newest technologies there, as well as some of the insurance products that are available. Not only are we publishing an insert in local newspapers, but we've been publishing on a monthly basis an article in the Wyoming Livestock Roundup, which is kind of the ag paper, I guess, for this state, and reaching out to folks with, again, a similar set of articles covering various different types of management activities we could possibly use to manage the risks that we're facing. We have published all of those on this website called insuringsuccess.org. I'm going to that handout I gave you actually has, I think, all of these URLs on it, so hopefully you won't have to write all these down. But again, there's a series of, I think it's 4 or 5 years that we've been publishing these articles, and there's quite a lot of them that offer some really neat alternatives. Again, cutting-edge kinds of things, maybe doesn't fit everybody's situation, but it's good to be in the know and know that you have some options. Another one that I've been involved in for a long time now, 15 years or better, is a risk management library. It's designed to put together materials for Western agricultural farms and ranches. It's called the Western Risk Management Library. It's I think we have got to be getting close to 800 different articles, fact sheets, PowerPoint presentations, various different kinds of things and resources to cover the five areas of risk. Okay, so it covers all five of those areas that I talked about earlier. And again, we've been publishing a number of bulletins specific for Wyoming in there. A couple of them that are most recent is that I think would be of great value to folks is one covering a typical livestock type ranch and the other a typical farm in this state, and looking at the various insurance products that are available and various combinations and what would be a good risk management strategy to adopt or to purchase in terms of these insurance products, and how would they leave you should something bad happen. And we actually look at a production loss as well as a market loss and how those products would perform. And so those are a couple of bulletins in this library, but like I say, there's nearly 800 different bulletins in there for Western agricultural situations. Another one that we put together just this last winter and previous fall is a series of presentations looking at the ag economy and some of the challenges that we're facing now. Mentioned last session in terms of ag credit and how a person can manage should credit become a challenge, should other kinds of adversity come about through the challenges that the economy represents. It's called Ag in Uncertain Times, but this program or the website farmmanagement.org also houses a wiki site that we put together to point people to various resources that are available on the internet, so that if you have questions about how to better manage the human resource, there are a number of different things in there, hotlines, for example, suicide hotlines around the country. But it was done as a series of online webinars that were recorded in their entirety. So I think there's something close to 40 or a little better hours of webinar presentations that are available on this website, as well as references to the handouts the speakers talked about, et cetera. So again, if there's a number of really good things in terms of managing risk that were discussed as part of that series, and they're available online and in their entirety. Now, I talked in the last session about these courses that we have put together, seven different courses currently available at the Right Risk website, covering a number of different topics. And I'm just going to talk about each of those briefly as we go through here. Ensuring Success is a course that was looking at the various insurance products, okay, with a brief presentation of each of those products, an example usually for each of those as to how they would apply in a typical situation in this state. And it also talks about risk management in a kind of an overall sense, and gives you a self-evaluation or self-assessment as kind of the last component of that. If you have questions about various insurance products, that may be a place to get started. Another course we put together is on taxes for agriculture. A lot of folks who come from business or are coming back to agriculture after having a career in another industry are not familiar with the tax benefits of agriculture and filing on an agricultural basis. So to just kind of cover the basics of that, we developed this course called Taxes for Agricultural Enterprises, and it basically steps through the fundamentals of filing taxes on an agricultural basis for federal income tax purposes. Another one we covered in the last session is called Feasibility of Alternative Rural Enterprises, and a course designed to help walk through and think about the various dimensions a new enterprise might represent for your current operation, or if you don't have something currently going, what would it mean? Thinking through all the implications of the capital requirements, the marketing requirements, the product attributes that you might need to be successful marketing to a various clientele, etc. Again, thinking about either a brand new enterprise or possibly a change to an existing enterprise to take advantage of new markets or a new marketing outlet for an existing product. The AGR Lite course is a course talking about that whole farm revenue insurance product I mentioned a little bit ago. again, just some of the basics, but to help people understand how it works. And there are some tools in there to help you in terms of thinking about your own setting and trying to calibrate the thing as to whether it would work for the losses that you're trying to insure against or not, perhaps. But again, a course focused on trying to understand that product. Another whole area of risk we've mentioned already, but that business of passing on to the next generation effectively is based on a study done by an insurance company looking at what it is that people value as they get close to the end of life in the current times. Historically, it's been the effective transfer of the estate, the actual wealth of the one generation to the next. Well, in this day and age, according to this study, there are a number of other things that people value, perhaps even more than that whole estate transfer component. And some of those things mentioned are values and life lessons that, again, the people surveyed said that they really want to pass on the things that they've learned in their own lives and the experience and the lessons that they've learned to the next generation. So that's a component of this course. The thing that seems like it, you hear about more often than not is the infighting within families about things that don't have a title. So a good example would be grandma's yellow pie plate or grandpa's shotgun or the china hutch that mom always had, that kind of stuff that, again, is not titled property, but it could be that the end of the family relationship if we don't effectively designate who it is that gets that and everybody has an understanding about it. So we talk about that component of the end of someone's life or planning for it when the time comes as to who should get what. Instructions and wishes to be fulfilled, that whole dimension of planning our end-of-life process that, again, previous generations haven't had available to them, right? The medical power of attorney, designating who it is that's going to make decisions about what kind of care we receive at the end, as well as ceremony planning, et cetera, a whole bunch of different aspects of which we get to make choices about in this day and age. And then the final component, number four, is listed as financial assets and real estate. So that estate transfer, titled property, who's going to get the land, who's going to get the farm, the trucks, et cetera. And worrying about that in a holistic sense. So this has been done as two courses, a series of presentations, but there's also a workbook with a number of forms to help you get started trying to step through and actually plan this for your own family situation. There were some examples of those workbooks on the table over there at the Right Risk poster if you're interested in taking a look at that. But again, all these courses are available online and the workbook is included as part of that. As a record-keeping course, and I thought in terms of ensuring or tools to help increase the odds of success, which is supposed to be the title of this presentation, this is probably the one tool I'd recommend people get started with if they're not keeping good records. I brought a copy of that course here. If you're interested in taking a CD version of it, you're certainly welcome to do so. This is not intended to be the be-all and end-all discussion of agricultural records, but rather for people who have not traditionally kept records or haven't kept complete records. It kind of steps through what kinds of records should you keep, and we do that with vignettes or kind of a case study farms or settings. Where people have started to keep records and the benefits of doing so are shown, whether it be that they can file on an agricultural basis for their taxes, or if they're trying to qualify for certain loans, keeping records is absolutely essential for some of those kinds of things. And so presenting that as kind of a package. Also, as part of the course or the disc, there are example record-keeping systems on there. So if you don't have a record-keeping system at all, there are a number of different examples there of forms that you could print off, or some of them are even done in a spreadsheet that you could use to begin keeping records right away. And we also talk about more sophisticated record-keeping systems that are available commercially should you be looking to move beyond kind of the basic records and what some of the more sophisticated packages that are available today are able to do. So in terms of managing risk kind of in a holistic sense, we've also put together this program called Risk Navigator. and have published a text that covers a 10-step process for managing risk in a strategic framework. So again, a stepwise way of thinking about risk in your own situation, you know, where you are in terms of your financial health, which would represent a risk and a source of risk to you if we're not particularly healthy, but also looking at how much risk you're comfortable carrying or your risk preference. And then taking that and looking at what kind of goals are you trying to accomplish. So setting some goals for yourself, both in terms of your overall operation as well as the level of risk that you're managing, and then looking at some tactics that you might could use to manage those risks, knowing that information about yourself and your situation. Okay, and then it also talks about some tools and offers and the steps to actually implement those plans, put them on the ground, and monitor to make sure that they're accomplished. Now, again, the text is a fairly profound sort of work. It's pretty thick. Took us 3 years to put together. Series of authors, I think 7 different authors contributed to the text. But the thing I find more gratifying is that we were able to put together a set of tools to help you implement this process. So there are over 40 tools that are mounted on this website that are available for free, one of which is demonstrated here is called the RD Financial is a way of analyzing your financial situation. So it's actually possible to put your financial information into this piece of software, and it will help you step through some of the financial analysis that we actually talked about in our last session. And it shows, this graph shows there's some green and yellow and red ranges to those various financial measures. It's possible to plug your information in. It'll show you whether or not you're in danger. And not only that, but it'll allow you with some sliders in this software to adjust like your family living withdrawal or increase the price you're getting for your calves or for your wheat and show you where you would end up should you be able to adjust those factors in one direction or another. Really powerful package there, but there are 40 tools altogether available to accompany the strategic risk management process. Again, available at the Right Risk website if you go there and if you're interested. So all of that, again, is referenced, and a number of links to external resources are available from the central Right Risk website. Again, if you're interested in following those up. I gave you that handout with the Right Risk on the one side, I guess it is, and then these different websites I've talked about and resources. Again, I think education is kind of the name of the game, staying on top of various alternatives available, not only insurance products, but, again, production technologies, marketing options available to us. And so I've kind of focused on that, but we've also offered you a number of tools in terms of these courses to kind of get more up to speed in some areas. I guess I'd ask this question as we finish up. Are you ever really finished managing risk? I see one shaking head. Well, no. And the point there is that if we were to say financial risk is our greatest source of risk right now, the one that's threatening our operation, and we developed a plan and we began to better manage our finances. We got maybe some better records in hand. We kind of got our financial house in order. If we got that all done and we were feeling pretty comfortable about it, that doesn't mean that we're all done managing the operation, right? That another source of risk might be something that we'd have to work on next. And it's going to be like that. There's always going to be something that we're continuing to need to intensify or better our management of. In terms of the resources and the risks that we face. And so, again, I guess it kind of brings me back to that educational theme that we've constantly got to stay abreast of what it is that's available to us. And so I would encourage you to maybe take a look at some of these alternatives and some of the websites that we put together to help, I guess, bring some of that information, kind of condense it down to make it a little more understandable in a lot of cases. So with that, I guess I'd ask, are there any questions about anything I covered? I covered a pretty broad space of ground there, a number of programs that we've put together to try to help. One thing I haven't mentioned, I talked about some of those statistics in terms of rural families, and there is a program, as I said, Enterprising Rural Families, that we've developed a monthly newsletter that tries to cover some of those dimensions of better managing as a family and a family operation doing, a rural set of enterprises. I brought copies here of that newsletter, but if you're interested, you can take one of those and also send an email in to us to ask to be subscribed to it. It comes out again every month, and trying to touch on these various different dimensions, whether it be communication. In this case, it was talking about the 12 characteristics of a successful family business, and just kind of walks you through thinking about, you know, a lot of cases we take this for granted and we've got a tradition of doing it that way, but we haven't really thought about the reason behind it, for example. But if we want to successfully transfer that operation to the next generation, I think we've got to become more proactive in thinking about how to build in some of these successful practices and techniques to make sure that we do bring along the next generation, and that they are prepared to take over once they're, you know, that they need to do that, and we're ready to hand that off to them. So again, that's another resource. Other questions anybody's got? Covered it pretty well, huh? Well, then, thank you very much for your participation and sitting in. Hope I've helped offer you some alternatives to think about. Again, thank you for coming.